Hey now, welcome to the City Off Campus podcast with your two favorite hosts, Sammy Sommerfeld and Jack McFarland. So before we jump into today's pod, where we're going to be talking about a few different Iowa sports than what we normally talk about, highlighting some of our past guests and what they're kind of up to since they came on the podcast. And we're going to talk about, you know, some football, some baseball. We're going to just kind of sprinkle everything in. I just want to talk about, lately, I've been using Good Pods quite a bit, Jack, to be honest. And I found some pretty fire sports pods on there. I'm not going to lie. Like, nothing as good as the City. But when I'm in need of, like, you know, a little fantasy sports talk, need a little bit of, you know, some players telling some stories, like, you know, here and there, maybe some Katie Nolan, Jacoby action on ESPN. I've been able to find some good stuff, and people have shared some cool stuff with me. I'm definitely grateful for being on Good Pods and finding the app. I think it's a great experience. If you haven't been on there, if you're on there and you haven't followed us yet, follow me at Sammy Sommerfeld and Jack McFarland. Obviously, you can find the City and all of our content on there. There's also a College Podcasters Network that I'm a part of that if you're interested in college podcasts or have a podcast and want to join, definitely join that group. And find some pods. I recommend stuff. I listen to a lot of the Barstool pods and stuff, and I'll post some comments about them on there. So definitely join. It's a great experience. So now jumping in. So this is what I want to call this segment of the podcast for now on, Jack. I mean, it's going to pump up our egos a little bit. The City Effect. So basically what the City Effect is after people come on their podcast, they ball out. I mean, the first one that I'll slightly reference, we're not going to dive deep into it, is, I mean, Patrick McCaffrey putting up 19 against Nebraska. That's part of the City Effect, in my opinion. But other people have been on the City Effect, and it might even be their teams, not even them individually statistically, but their teams as well. You look at Iowa Gymnastics. They're like 5-1. They're ranked in like the top 20 teams in the country right now. I think they're ranked, as of now, they're ranked 17 in my standings. So, you know, their goal originally was to be top 25 when Aaron came on the podcast, Aaron Castle. So, I mean, to be 17, it was right before the season. I think it has to do with the City. I don't know about you.
I 100% agree. I think it is 100% all, not all. I'd say 50% because of us. Winning the Big Ten regular season in gymnastics, I'm sure, is no small feat. And Aaron came on and said, the team's fucking loaded. And I don't think there was any doubt from the start that this team was going to kick ass. They had the top floor team from the get-go. Like, I don't think they've been ranked lower than top five from the floor. And guys, I don't watch gymnastics, but I just know that's really freaking good that they're top five from the floor. They won the Big Five meet, which I believe is like Ohio State, Michigan, Minnesota. I don't even know who else. Just all the actually good teams that are in gymnastics, Iowa beat them all. Yep. So we want the SEC schools now for gymnastics. We want Bama, LSU, Florida, Georgia. I don't give a shit. We want them. We're coming for them. But yeah, and shout out to Providence Catholic alum Karina Tolan. She actually got some reps on the bars in their last event, I believe. So that's a really cool moment. She was featured on a bunch of tweets and on some of their graphics. So that's just really fucking cool for me to see her do that. And like I said, Aaron said this team's loaded, and they are just so goddamn good. Like, I don't know how else to put it. They are so good. They look good. They perform good, and they're best in the Big Ten for a reason.
For sure. And then speaking of another past guest on the City, there's Leah Zeitler, who had a big week out in Vegas. She was like one of the top
in the casinos or on the course?
On the course, not in the casinos. Okay. I don't think the golf team's allowed to go to casinos right now, but she played pretty well. I think in her final round, she fired off a 74 to finish, which I was like, okay, the City Effect right there.
Definitely.
She was Big Ten Women's Golfer of the Week recently as well. So just that right there, the City Effect. It's just, you know, athletes, any Iowa athletes who are currently listening to this, hit us up. We're, depending on what we have going on with our guests and our schedule, we'd love to have you on the podcast, because guess what? Once you come on, you're going to be performing at your best. And it's not from anything we do. It's literally just, you know, come on, talk to us. We give you a little inspiration. You're like, oh, crap.
I'm ready to go. I'm ready to fall out. Like,
just to expand a little more upon what Leah did, I just pulled up this article from the DI, and she broke a record, which I had absolutely no idea about. So one of the things it says here is Leah doesn't like to know where she's at, I guess, mm-hmm. in the standings. Yeah. And in one round, she shot 6 under a par 66, the lowest score for a single round in the history of Iowa's women's golf program. And she shot 6 under a par 66. That's ridiculous. Yep.
And let me just say, did she break that record before she came on the city?
I don't think so. It was after. No, this article is March 2nd. So
that's what I'm saying. A few months after, she gets into season and she just starts going. And I can't pinpoint anything else. Obviously, you know, she trains and, you know, they compete, they play and everything. But I have to say, I think 95% of that was because she came on the city.
100%. And another sport that is starting their season today is the Iowa Hawkeye baseball team. They're facing Michigan throughout this weekend. I don't know if it's a double or triple header. It's a quadruple header. Psych. They're playing 2 on Sunday, 1 today at 6 p.m. and 1 Monday at 11 a.m. That's groovy. Yeah, I mean, I don't know how else you could start a good season than just beat the shit out of Michigan. I think they're in Texas, which is cool. I don't know why they're in Texas. Maybe because Texas just kind of reopened everything because of COVID. This is a sports podcast, not a COVID podcast. But, yeah, I'm excited to see how the baseball team opens up. Yeah. I mean, they had a bunch of momentum going into last year before the season ended. They beat Kansas, like Ty said, on the pod. Well. So I'm curious to see. They were projected to finish 4th in the Big Ten this preseason and 5th in the conference standings. But the coaches poll had him 4th, so the coaches respect them more than the writers do, which is good. It's always good to have the coaches respect you more than the sports writers. And last year, like I just said, they were starting their season at a 10-5 start. That was the best start they had since 2015, so a lot of momentum that they just couldn't continue. So I'm excited to see what this baseball team does. Nobody really sits there and says Iowa baseball is something to be excited about, but they made it to the World Series. We had Ty Snap on. He said that they're loaded on the pitching staff, and Austin Martin and Ben Norman are absolute killers. So we'll see how this team unfolds, but I think Iowa baseball is going to be one to definitely watch out for.
Yeah, I think it's going to be the city effect too. I mean, if you look at this past year of Iowa sports, we're pretty incredible. We're pretty incredible as an athletic department. I mean, you look at the swimming teams, they're going to the Big Ten championships, like, and competing the track and field teams, what they're doing right now. Like, Iowa basketball, obviously, women's basketball. I mean, they're not ranked, but they're a competitive team. I mean, Caitlin Clark to me is one of the top 3 players in the country. And she's going to, and you know, the thing with women's basketball, which is so interesting, is like, they can't even leave to go pro until they're 21. So we have another year or 2 years of Caitlin Clark, who's going to probably be the face of women's basketball by next year. And you look at Iowa football, I mean, we're 6-2. We lost some really BS games. The Purdue Northwestern games, absolute BS games. We should have like been in a Power 5 bowl game, in my opinion, or a New Year's 6, whatever you want to call it. But like, just like looking at Iowa right now, like, to me, there's always a few Iowa teams that are always super competitive, but usually it's like football, not basketball, or basketball, not football. Like, it's very unbalanced where it's always a few teams and not a, you know, a couple others. Right now, I just feel like we're one of the best programs in Iowa athletics.
Yeah, and wrestling has been number one from the jump. They haven't wavered from that ranking. They've been number one. They have the best wrestlers in basically every weight class. They're wrestling right now. And if you don't watch Iowa wrestling, I don't know what the hell you're doing. Like, it's legitimately a bar fight with one side. You know that guy's going to kick the other guy's ass, and you just watch it, and you are enjoying it the entire time. That's what Iowa wrestling is versus everyone else. They just kick the shit out of them. Yeah, it's literally an Iowa style. They just kick the shit out of everybody.
Well, you know what I think might be a good comparison for Iowa wrestling? It's like an Avenger movie. You know the Avengers are going to win when you turn on the movie, and you know they're just going to pound, you know, whoever by the end. Like, the final fight's just going to be an absolute killing, but you know they're coming out on top. Like, that's what Iowa wrestling is. you know, you're like, you know, maybe one or two of the matches, you're like, oh, maybe we, you know, this is going to be a little bit more competitive or interesting. But we know we're taking every win. Like, you know, we're winning every match. Like, it's Iowa.
Mm-hmm. No, and I tweeted from the Barstool account about Iowa wrestling beating Illinois in a duel, and people from Illinois were chirping me about caring for Iowa wrestling, and I'm like, just do some research. You'll understand why people care. This is the most storied program in the nation, and that's it. There's nothing else to say. They have won. They are the standard, period. And I, looking at my monitor right now, is there's commercial for the Big Ten Championships, and I see Dan Gable. Dan Gable doesn't even coach at Iowa anymore, and people still talk about him as one of the greatest wrestling coaches, period. All right. I
mean, he was.
Exactly. He got, I don't know, like, Trump gave him the Presidential Medal of Freedom. Yeah. I don't know why, but maybe because of how great Dan Gable was for the sport of wrestling, yeah, and just athletics as a whole.
Well, I think even, too, if you look at, like, Team USA and the stuff he did there, too, mm-hmm, I think, like, you know, just all
he together. Is the epitome of wrestling in America and what it really stood for. And you see Olympians and gold medals and national championships, and just there isn't anything Iowa wrestling really hasn't accomplished. That's why, yeah, we talk about it.
Well, the thing that's interesting to me about wrestling is, for me, like, where, you know, obviously in the Midwest, it's huge. And I think part of the reason it's huge, too, is, like, you can do it inside all year. So in the winter, people are training and wrestling, and they're able to, you know, play a real sport that way. But, like, you know, being from Florida, like, wrestling, you know, got a little bit bigger, actually, like, by the time I graduated high school. But still, it wasn't really a thing people talked about at all. Like, it, you know, it just wasn't. And coming to Iowa, I was like, you know, we're good at wrestling, but isn't it kind of a dying sport? That's kind of how I thought of it going in. And when you come here and you see the Penn States too, and all this stuff, like wrestling culture and how big wrestling is in the Midwest, I think it's one of the fastest growing sports, to be honest.
Yeah, I think
it's one of those things that was kind of sloping down, probably like mid-2000s, I'd say. And I feel like it's just shot up over the last couple of years, because you just look at the athletes coming into college and going into, you know, the Olympic teams and everything, the Spencer Lees, the whoever. And, you know, you look at Spencer Lee, I think he has like 150,000 followers on Instagram or something. He has a huge following. And you're like, you know, a wrestler has 150K? Like, that shows how loyal the sports fans are. If you watch a wrestling podcast or something, so I've seen podcast wrestling theme that get 800,000 views on YouTube and stuff, like clips and stuff, like people watch them. And I'm just like, who are all these people? Because it's just not something that, you know, you turn on ESPN, they're never talking about wrestling, you know, unless it's in the SC top 10 or, you know, something, yeah, like that. So it's like, cool, because to me, I almost look at it, my comparison to wrestling in some ways has been like in the 90s when there was like Nirvana and that rock scene, like Seattle, where it was like that grunge, like underground scene that was super popular, but like it was kind of in the closet type of thing. Not a lot of people really knew about it. That's what wrestling is to me. Like outside the Midwest, people don't know what the, you know, what wrestling really is like. Mm-hmm. And then you leave outside, you know, you go into the Midwest, come outside, and you're like, holy shit, this is bigger than I ever thought it would be.
Yeah, and I think one thing that you just said, wrestling growing, and it's, I really feel like part of it has to do with football, maybe it's regression, because obviously, yeah, football has its countless injuries and the head traumas, and there's a lot to it. And when you look at like wrestling, and then you look at football, and you look at what an athlete needs in order to be safe in each of those sports, football, helmet, shoulder pads, knee pads, thigh pads, ankle braces, whatever the fuck else. All right. And that doesn't even cover for like a non-contact injury that you can get, which is completely worse than anything else. When you go to wrestling and you need a headgear to cover your ears so you don't get cauliflower ear. Everything else is, I mean, it can happen, but the odds of it happening is probably a lot less. on my monitor right here, while you were talking about people caring about wrestling, they were showing a montage of Iowa fans sitting on the mats during the duels or whatever at Carver. And it was like Spencer Lee flipping someone, taking him down. And all of these people, boys, girls, kids, dads, moms, dogs, whatever, they're jumping up and down, putting their fucking twos in the air for that takedown. And they're going berserk. And I literally got goosebumps for a half second because I'm like, these people care so fucking much about wrestling. But if you leave the state of Iowa or the state of Illinois or maybe even Missouri, Indiana, whatever, this Midwest, like you said, people don't think it's that
people
serious.
Aren't filling arenas for wrestling on like here.
And Iowa, they have that attendance record for nearly 20 years running, period. Yeah. Because they filled that damn arena, standing room only.
Well, that's what I'm so bummed about with COVID. Like, obviously, I was sad. Like, we couldn't go to a basketball game or football. But last March, I was going to go to a wrestling match. And then COVID happened. Like, I was going to go. And then I skipped that weekend. And then next week, we flew home. And so I've still never been. And I'm just like, I want to go.
Oh, my God.
Basketball games are electric. Football games are electric. But I feel like wrestling is so unique. Because who outside the state of Iowa is going to be able to go to a college wrestling match and be in a basketball arena that's completely packed for the event? And every match is just as hype as the next, whether it's Spencer Lee, you know, or whoever else is next, you know, Brands, whoever. So, like, for me, that's what I'm looking forward to most about Iowa athletics coming back next year is obviously Kinnick, and we'll have fun going to those games. But, like, to go to a wrestling match where you're just in a stadium full of people who just love the sport, because the people that go love the sport. It's not like they're a casual football fan where it's like, oh, I can go to a game, cheer on, you know, Iowa Hawkeyes and just enjoy the tailgating and stuff. You go because you love the damn sport. Like, we've had guests on, like, I was thinking about Jay Hilgenberg when he talked to us about wrestling. And he just talks about how wrestling changed his football career and how without wrestling, he wouldn't have been the football player he is. And one thing I've learned from talking to wrestlers and people who have wrestled is the fact that even watching it after those conversations, I've really seen it is, you know, football is all about strategy, obviously. But like wrestling, I think the strategy involved with wrestling is just unreal. Because, like, you have to think about every little body part and how somebody could get taken down. Like, just, it's all physical. It's a physical sport, but there's so much strategy that goes along with it. Because every person you face is going to be a different competitor. You know what I mean? Nobody's, you know, similar.
Yeah, and something that Jay and I learned a ton at Providence that he talked about was wrestling is the ultimate individual sport.
Yep.
Because there is no one else accountable for your actions than yourself in that setting. It is you against the other guy, two humans pitted against themselves. Like, it is the most ancient way of athletics, and it's still around today for a reason, because it is just so, it's infectious, the energy. It is nonstop, constant action of two people going at it. It's, I mean, like, yes, there's boxing, there's UFC, but there's wrestling, and wrestling, those rules, it allows for just such a beautiful display of athleticism and power in such a controlled manner that you don't see it in any other sport. And they go for three continuous minutes and they get maybe 5-10 seconds off between the periods. And then to start the next period, 90% of the time it's someone starts down and they have to escape in order to kind of keep the match flowing. You don't see that in other sports where someone's given an advantage to start the period and then you get a point for coming out. That just adds a totally different dynamic, not even to mention riding time, tech falls. Like, there's so much that I don't even know that is evident in wrestling that just makes it so sick. And I'm in an Olympics class right now, and I mean, it dates all the way back to ancient Greece, man, and just how those that was one of the first sports ever was just wrestling. You know, and it's still around today. And it's not just wrestling. Like, there's freestyle, there's Greco-Roman, there's, I don't know the other ones, but there's different styles of wrestling where it's like, it's so big that they had to like just add different rules to make it that much more interesting because people wanted that. You don't see that with football. You don't see like, there's Australian rules football in Australia, but nobody here cares about that. Nobody cares.
Yeah.
But that's like the thing with wrestling. Australian rules football is just another type of wrestling. So I really do think wrestling is going to continue to get bigger, but you really don't hear about it on ESPN or anything. And that's a disservice. Like, yes, Big Ten Network's carrying this Big Ten tournament, but it's ESPN national TV type of quality. And you don't see wrestling on these type of channels until the NCAAs. And the NCAAs are so cool. And I have friends that have been to the NCAAs and they say it's one of the coolest experiences ever because it's just all around the country, guys coming together and just wrestling each other. But it's, yeah, they're wrestling. I don't think it'll ever cease to exist. I really don't.
No, I think you touched on it earlier, you know, obviously football is the, you know, biggest sport, you know, commercially in the country. And it still is, even though a lot of parents are pulling their kids out of, you know, Pop Warner and that type of stuff. And, you know, that's kind of died down a little bit. But I see a lot of these kids who want a physical sport, if they're not allowed to play football, going to wrestling. And that's where I think the growth of wrestling is really going to come from, is if parents are so hesitant about concussions and that type of stuff, they kind of, you know, put them in wrestling because there isn't as much of that type of stuff that can really happen. You know, people could still get it from certain things, but it's not the same type of physical activity. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And one thing with wrestling too is, you know, you talk about boxing and you talk about UFC. For me, I used to be a bigger boxing fan a couple of years ago. And then when I started watching wrestling, I almost completely disregarded boxing. Because I just think wrestling strategy wise, just the movement, like, it's so beautiful to watch. You kind of said that earlier too, but just like everything can change in a second in wrestling. Like, you literally can't take your eyes off the match, because if you literally go to pick up your drink, somebody's in a new position and they might be losing the match now.
I have a story, you know, just about that. My buddy Logan Anderson was wrestling in the sectionals our senior year, and he was wrestling like a top three kid in his weight at 220. And Logan is a hell of a wrestler. And I just remember we were there and I grabbed my phone because it was the last 30 seconds of this match. And I go, it's so tight that, you know, something is going to happen in these last 30 seconds. And sure as shit, Logan got taken down and he reversed it in the matter of half a second. And the kid was literally on his back shoulders and Logan won and the place fucking erupted. And it was just like that. You never see it coming. But it's just the way everything flowed and moved. Then Logan ended up reversing the kid, and fuck that kid from Lincoln Way West, because he really got it. But it was just the personification of how, just like you said, it can happen at any moment. And people say that in football, on any given play. Yeah, but you get 25, 30 seconds between each play to think about what's going to happen next. You don't have that long in wrestling, period. Yeah. You get 5 seconds between a period, and maybe you hear your coach while you're wrestling the guy. But it's not like you can say, hey, hold on, like, let me get a breather. Let me listen to what he's got to say. The only time you're getting a breather is if you're bleeding.
Yeah.
That's it.
So I have a question for you, being a kid who grew up in Illinois where, you know, some of your buddies wrestled, you grew up going to matches and things like that. What was the culture like growing up? Like, obviously, like, you know, for me, like, I was around a lot of baseball players where they were playing travel ball all the time, you know, all that type of stuff. What's like the wrestling culture like for kids growing up as wrestlers? Like,
oh man,
what are the hours? Like, can you take, like, you know, me and our listeners kind of through that a little bit of like how you saw your friends train, how they were into it, like, you know, how it became an infectious thing, even for you to go watch it, you know, a match at your high school or whatever.
The best way I could put it, because I wasn't directly like in wrestling even in high school or growing up, right, is I'll talk about high school specifically because that was the best experience I had of like watching it and just knowing it. A lot of my friends from football would, after football, join wrestling. And it was like their focus on everything that was sport and their teammates and like that camaraderie just goes from uber football or uber whatever to just wrestling only. It's wrestle. After school gets out 2:35, 2:50, they got to be up in the room and they got to be running around doing their warm-ups and shit, and who knows how long that lasts. That's every day. Then they have a duel. They got to make weight for their duels at home. So think about, like, you go to lunch and you're over 2 pounds, and this is an actual story, and we have chicken sandwiches, and one of my buddies who was the, in quote, captain of the team was sitting at that lunch table with another wrestler, and the kid's just eating his lunch. His name is Matt. Matt was eating his lunch like it was his business. Matt also blew weight like it was his business. But Matt could, if Matt made weight, Matt would kick the ass. Matt was like, dude, I want to fucking eat my food. I don't care. And that was one of the things that really stood out for wrestlers, was the making the weight. And it wasn't just like, if I'm 225, maybe they'll look at me and say, you could go wrestle 195. they'll make you drop that weight because they know what your BMI is. They do the pinch test. They figure out how much body fat and muscle you actually have in order to understand where your like legitimate wrestling weight is. So I know plenty of kids that dropped a weight class or two just because they needed to based on a given need for a season or just what their potential could be at another weight. Now, when you do that and you cut a lot of weight, the odds of you being as like strong and efficient, maybe that first match is really, really low. Cause you just, A, you're not used to that weight, but B, the odds of that, the odds of that guy across from you having been at that weight for maybe a year and he knows how to wrestle that weight, that's another factor. So weight in high school is a really big thing. And that was like the biggest obstacle I'd say for a lot of kids was not like making the weight, was maybe wrestling at that weight and like being competitive at it. Cause there were some kids who were just, they would climb one weight class each year. And then maybe you would have to climb two or three and you were just getting your shit kicked in by that two or three weight classes up. Like you see it with Conor McGregor, and it's not a great comparison, but Conor fought 145 or whatever against Aldo. And then he jumps 20 pounds and fights Diaz. He got his ass kicked by Diaz because Diaz has been at that weight for years.
Yeah.
Conor jumped that in months and his conditioning wasn't there, but Conor could still strike. He just wasn't the fighter he was. And that's a lot of what you see in wrestling. But those guys, like when they're in the room together, when they're on the road together, it is as tight knit of a team as you could ever see, because like they wrestle each other at practice. They wrestle for like, to be the leader in their weight class for a given duel. So they get the first nod unless someone else doesn't. So it's like, there is that competitiveness against each other that makes you as great of a wrestler as you could be to face other people. And like I said earlier, it is the most individualistic sport because it all comes down to you. Like, yeah, you can get coached by your coaches or coached by your teammates, but it doesn't matter unless you don't put it to the test and actually like wrestle with what they're teaching. It takes I said this, it's in high school and a lot of people know I said, and I say it to a lot of people, wrestlers, especially wrestlers from Providence Catholic, have my utmost respect because they were treated and worked out like dogs, like absolute dogs. I feel bad for them because I thought I had it bad at football, but those kids were mercilessly ran through. But you have to, that has to be the standard that you wrestle at, because if you're any ounce of softer, there's any ounce of quit, you're fucking done, period. It doesn't matter. So they had to train them as hard as they could. And that's a lot of these guys now, like I talk to them and they are some of the most like resilient, hardworking people because of just this standard that was set upon them in wrestling. Like they didn't, there was no room for lollygagging, for giving half effort, for anything, just taking any second off, you couldn't. And especially not at Providence, you couldn't, just because we have 10 state championships. We've had multiple All-Americans. People go Division I. Our coach had won 6 or 7. Rudy, remember Rudy from the movie Notre Dame? His brother is the one who made Providence Catholic's wrestling program legit. Rudy was the only Rudiger that didn't go to Providence. His brothers went to Providence and started that wrestling program. Rudy went to JCA. So Providence, from its foundation, had wrestling, and they raised it all the way up to the top. And if you go into that wrestling room, there's pictures of state champions and just the most breathtaking pictures of just how important it is. And you see a picture of the Iowa State Championships for wrestling. That's so important to those people. So important. It is like God, family, wrestling sometimes. Like it is, but that's like I said, you have to be obsessed with wrestling in order to be successful. You have to be.
So one question I have for you is, at Providence or in the Midwest, in terms of the cultures, I'm not saying the fan bases of the sports, but what is tighter knit and more diehard? Football or wrestling?
So it depends. I'll say it depends based on location. If you're from Central Illinois, wrestling will matter more than if you're near the city of Chicago, just because that's what football and basketball have done to the city of Chicago. But it is very regional, I'd say. But wrestling, it's just, like it's similar to football where you compete against your teammates to get that starting position. But in football, it takes 11 people to make something happen. And I wouldn't say the relationship with like an offensive lineman is the same with a receiver to a running back or whatever. But in wrestling, everyone's pulling the same rope. And there are like, I'd call it a dozen weight classes. What makes the culture in wrestling so like intense is it is so individual. You need to go out there and perform you. And if you win or lose, it directly impacts the entire team rankings and team points going into that duel. So if I win my match, we get 6 points. If I tech fall my kid, we'll get 12 points. It matters how much you win by and how, like, if you win in general. And if you lose, like, that means someone else needs to pick up that slack and kick someone's ass really bad. You don't see that in football where if like someone takes a playoff or whatever, the whole thing will collapse. But in wrestling, if one guy loses, it doesn't mean that it's all is lost. You still have 11 other guys that can come in and kick some fucking ass, get those points and win the duel. That's where I think it becomes really obsessive because you are rooting so hard for everybody on your team. It's very similar to gymnastics, actually. You're really rooting for that person to like kick ass, not just for themselves, but for the whole team as a whole. Cause yeah, they could falter, but it doesn't stop the whole team. And that was something in football that was really harped on with us was it takes 11 guys to make a play work. And if one guy screws up, the whole play fails. But you could have 10 guys do something right and the 11th doesn't, and the whole thing collapses. It's not the way in wrestling. In wrestling, you could have one guy collapse, but you need everyone else to pick up the next guy and really get him to get going. That was what was different. And
so
wrestling,
it's more so like, are you kind of saying with like, with wrestling, it's kind of, obviously it's an individual sport, but the team bond is so strong there where it's like, if you fuck up, we don't care because we got you.
Yes.
But with football, there's the pressure of if you fuck up, we're screwed.
Yes, that is 100%. With football, you could fuck up one play. Next day you go to film and they put the laser pointer on you. That's probably the worst you'll feel is when you get that laser pointer put on you and they're like, what the fuck are you doing? You let everyone down here. That's how low you'll feel. And you'll feel low in that moment on the field when you fuck up. But in wrestling, yeah, you lose a match, but there's 11 other guys that are set to go that can pick you back up and like make sure that is just a minimal detail in this entire grand scheme of the duel or the tournament or whatever. And another thing with wrestling is usually in tournaments like they have in the Big Ten, if you lose, there's wrestle backs. It's a double elim. So you can lose once and still make it. You just need your guy that you lost to keep winning in order for you to stay alive. It's insane. It is insane how you could root for someone you lost to win in order for you to stay alive.
I want to ask you about, you know, you talked about picking guys up and stuff. So, you know, you talk about getting called out in a meeting. Like if you're that one guy, you know, after a game where, you know, one guy fucks up the play and then it's like, great. Like, you know, I'm getting called out. So being in a locker room with football, cause I never was, is there more the pressure of, I just don't want to be the guy that messes up. And obviously you have the bond with your teammates where, you know, they're your boys and they got your back. But is there also kind of a thing there too, where it's just like, I don't want to be that guy where like people are going to be not upset with me, but they're going to be like, come on, dude, how do you mess up this play when we've been practicing it all week?
100%.
There's a wrestling where there's like, hey, we got you. Sit on the bench, you know, after your match and we're going to take this thing over and we're going to, you know.
Yeah, like I said, my offensive line coach was the one who gave us that cliche of 10 people do their job and one doesn't. It all fucks up. That's the way it is.
So how stressful was it for you and your teammates when you guys would go on the field and you guys were practicing? Let's just say, here's the scenario I'm going to give you. You guys are in O-line meetings all week. You guys have a practice. You practice every day that week. And one or two guys keep messing up certain plays where it's just not picking up or they're struggling to block, whatever the case is. There's just errors going on. It's not strong practices. Go into the game and, you know, that guy or you or whoever is just thinking in the back of their head, I can't mess up this time. This is the game type of thing. Having that, like after all the coaches yelling at them, calling out all week, how does that impact performance that when, if they do mess up that, you know, one block or that one run, whatever, how does it feel or how do the teammates around you help you or hurt you in those situations?
I don't think there was ever any pushback by teammates. It was more of like an unsaid, if you fuck up and people know you fucked up, they'll know and you know, and it's just an unsaid, don't do it again. But I think one thing you kind of just alluded to was, oh God, I missed the point I was going to say. What did you just kind of say? You fucking
about the practice, the preparation, you know, things not clicking the whole week.
Oh, so yeah. So like if you go to like a game scenario and like that's the one thing is you think of I can't do this in the game. Like that's the one problem with football that I think also in wrestling you don't really see is thinking. You can't think. The reason we do practice so vigorously and we hammer things and hammer things and hammer things is so we don't think. So it just comes and our instincts take over. That's the thing with football. People, you can see who thinks too much and who doesn't. The people who don't think are the ones where their feet, their legs, their arms, everything is in unison and they're just going. The people who don't do that are the ones that you can tell make a slight
miss. Or waving their arms.
Yes, they're thinking. And that's what you can't do. That's the one thing in football. So if someone messes up, maybe you come up to them like I have, and I'm just like, don't think, just play. You're thinking too much. And that's like, that is football. It is very stressful where you don't want to be that guy. And if you do make that play, you got 30 seconds to flush it and make a new play. But one thing in football that you don't really get in wrestling is if you make a mistake in football, you're taught make it 100% and 100 miles per hour. Wrestling, you make a mistake, you're probably going to lose that match. Yeah. So in football, you get that chance to like bounce back. In wrestling, it's more or less do or die.
Well, one thing I want to pick up on that you said too, is you talked about don't think and just kind of feel and stuff. So one thing, you know, with wrestling, you know, I talked about strategy earlier. The thing I meant with strategy that I find interesting about wrestling is the strategy is based off of feel and instinct. Like, you know, you just have to touch a guy and kind of figure out what bothers him, what doesn't, where he's kind of weak with his grip or whatever it is. So like with football, you know, when you're about to make a block, is it kind of like that too, where it's all feel, or is it more just all motion? Like, it's just all like, make sure I keep my arms out, or, you know what I
mean?
There's a lot.
So like for an offensive lineman specifically, when you, so like play comes in, you get to the line, you know, your responsibility, let's say it's a zone, right? You're supposed to take your step right and pick up the guy to your right, or you're double teaming him, or maybe you'll pull around. You have to communicate that. Usually the first thing you do is you communicate with the guy next to you about what you're going to do if you need to communicate anything extra. From that point on, you look at who's in front of you, what the linebackers are in, and if anyone's moving. And if there's any movement, you call it out. From then, it's instinct. Once the play gets called, once you hear your quarterback start doing the cadence, the ball gets snapped, you know your responsibility. You know what you're supposed to do. It's feel. It's both. It's feel and just instinct, because you have to feel where your guy is going and where the ball is going. Because if he's going towards the ball, your job is to get between him and the ball. If he's taking his momentum away from the ball, take him that way. Or if he's completely out of the play, let him go. But having an understanding of like the basic concept that you're running and where that ball is going is 90% of it. Because if you're running a zone right, like I just used it as an example, and your tackle in front of you is going left, don't touch him. Just let him go, because you know the ball is not going that way. So you have to, it is like, literally, it is both. You have to know, but you have to feel. And you don't have a lot of time to do it. So that's where the instinct really kicks in. And you have to just read and react and keep playing at 100 miles per hour. Because the second you stop and think is usually when you get hurt. That's when you get hurt, is when you stop going 100%. And if you go 75% because you kind of thought about something, that's when you get hurt. And that's what I've always been taught, is you don't go quarter, three-quarter speed against full speed, because you'll get hurt. So make your mistakes as hard as you can. Play like you would when you make your mistake. But back to your question, it is really instinct and feeling. You really can't do either without one or the other. Like it is very tied together.
For you, when you played, what were times that threw you out of your comfort zone or out of what you practiced that got you uncomfortable? And then what were things when you were super locked in,
when did you know, like, games where you were super confident, like, I got this game, this is going to be easy, or, like, you know, I know what to do all game, and you were just in the flow, and then, you know, when you were out of your comfort zone?
So I'd say the only thing that really threw me out of my comfort zone was, there was one team, was Loyola, and I actually felt the most comfortable my senior year against Loyola, but my junior year, I was – and I'm not even going to say East St. Louis, because I know a lot of people, like, we played East St. Louis. They were a great team, great athletes, but, like, we knew what we were up against. They were just phenomenal, great team. When we played against Loyola, it's not like they were athletically just better than us. There was a schematic difference with how they were ran that you just knew, no mistakes, because they're going to key off everything we know. They know what we know. So you can't really, like, fuck up with them. So with Loyola, our junior year, like, they were making, like, we would make a call and they knew our call, and we were like, this is fucked. Like, if they knew what we were doing before each play, we knew we were fucked. And that was, dude, we lost by like 40 on senior day against them. And Saturday and Wilmette, we got pumped, but they knew what we were doing. So one of the things that I really started to do after my junior year was, and I talked to previous players of my position, was look at your matchup, specifically the guy across from you, whether, and you check their number, because usually some guys like to be on the left or the right, or they flip them based on strength, and look at what they do on second down, third down, try to get their tendencies. And so going into Loyola my senior year, one of the guys across from me was Mitch Geary. He was like the blue co-defensive player of the year that year. He wasn't great, but he'd gotten bigger from the year prior. And Loyola's defense, their head coach was a former NFL linebacker, and so he knew what he was doing. He and I always ask my coaches, like, how the fuck do they run their defense? And they don't even really have an idea, whether they assign numbers to the guys and then the play calls, they give a number and a tag with it. I don't know. But with Loyola, they really knew. And so my senior year, I watched a ton of film, and Loyola was the best at giving simulated pressures and showing where they want you to think a pressure is coming from, and then just sending it from a completely different area. So I spent a ton of time just looking at their backers and just where their D linemen were aligned and where you could expect a twist up front or a twist from the behind. Cause anytime someone leaves, usually that gap gets filled. So understanding where the first guy goes, you'll know where the second guy is coming from. So my senior year, I knew what was happening, and I called it out before every snap. Like, I could see it and I knew it. And that was the first time in my life where I was like, everyone says Loyola's defense is hard, but if you just sit there and you realize, like, it is so dependent on positioning and where they are and which holes they're giving, you'll know what's happening. And so I called a couple times, like a twist or a blitz. I saw something I didn't like, and I like told the guy next to me, and it felt good. And fucking, we're losing by 2 touchdowns. And Marty, like, I pick up a twist that I called out seconds before the play happened. I knew Marty was twisting over, and he was like, nice call. And I'm like, shut up. Like, I know it's a nice call. I did my job. Don't tell me it was good. That's what I'm supposed to do. And that's what it really came down to, is knowing what you had made you so much more comfortable. But if there was, like, the toughest thing to prepare for was a team that was, there was no tendency on. We would always work based on tendencies. And if third down, what would they give us if we gave them a 2x whatever set? You know, we worked on tendencies. And if a team didn't have a tendency, it was like, oh shit, what the fuck is going on? I don't think East St. Louis had much of a tendency. They played man up. They played man. And they just said, we're better athletes than you. That's their tendency. They wanted to use pure athleticism to beat us. That's, What are we going to do as a team if they just know they're better athletes? There's not a whole lot we can do. We just stick to what we knew. And that's what football is. It's just sticking to what you know and figuring out what they know and what they do and trying to, like, make the perfect play, perfect scenario in any given case. And in football, more than any sport, they will win 30% of the plays, maybe 40% of the plays. We'll win 40% of the plays, but it comes down to a 20%, maybe a dozen or so plays that are really crucial that determine the outcome of a game. Third downs, fourth down conversions, anything in the red zone. every time a team, like, you know, they're going to win a play unless they're shit. You know, a team won't win a play if they're really bad. But if you're an evenly matched, no, they'll win some plays. We'll win some plays. But it really matters in those crucial plays, third downs, fourth downs, like I said, 2 points. That's when it really, really matters. And that's when tendencies come in. And if you know your tendencies, you know their tendencies, you have a basic understanding of what's going to happen this play. And that's when the play call, like, we're going to run a play action on a 3rd and 3, and they love to fill the box. We're going to smoke them right here. But if we had been showing all the previous 2 weeks that in that same formation we're coming out for play action, that we like to run it up the B gap, they might bring a safety down and we'll just hammer that corner out there. Something like that. So it really, if there was a team that you could like understand what they like to do, made life so much easier. But if a team like East St. Louis just sat there and said, hey, we're going to play man coverage, do whatever, it's like, all right, we know we're athletically deficient against them, but we know what we're good at. So it made life difficult with them. But yeah, you could tell with teams like Loyola and East St. Louis and other ones, you could tell that there was just a coaching difference and a level of detail that they were given. I don't really think there's any better example than East St. Louis and Loyola. Like, Loyola knew our calls. East St. Louis didn't know shit about us other than we're better athletes than you. And we weren't like, there was nothing in the East St. Louis game that we could have done to better ourselves, because we just knew they were better athletes in certain positions. There was a gap. But with Loyola, they aren't better athletically. Like, we can hang with all of these kids, period. It was, like I said, the detail that they had gone into made life more difficult.
Yeah,
I know that was a long-winded answer. That is the only way I can put it. Yeah, like, it is.
So I have one final question, because this kind of segued into high school sports coaching, playing all this stuff, and it kind of took a turn that wasn't expected, but that's what makes the podcast fun. I wanted to ask you about, you know, I've been around high school coaches, you've been around high school coaches, you know, I've heard things about other high school coaches in different states, different schools, everything, and there's always been a mixed thing on this. When it comes to high school football coaches, you know, there are some coaches that are just high football IQ, really know their stuff. And I think there are other ones who kind of don't really know. And it's kind of, you know, they know the basics and they kind of go from there. With your experience in playing high school football, or friends who went to other schools, how much do you feel like high school football really prepares people for college football? And how, like, when it comes to like the assistant coaches and stuff, how much did you, as a player, did you feel like some of it was just BS? They're kind of putting on an act with terminology and stuff. And how much was really like, wow, this is a real game plan. This is a strategy that we can legit apply to our team and our game.
I'll say this about Providence specifically, and I don't give a shit what I say about Providence. I think that Providence has some of the best offensive, or not offensive, just some of the best assistant coaches, period, in the state, defensively more so than offense. But you really don't set a tone of a staff unless your head coach is like the culture setter, the tone setter, the guy that everyone can kind of rally behind. And that's something Providence lacked. If your high school or JUCO or whatever, if your program has a strong leader figure, you will go many places. But if there's just a one little weak link, like Providence had, I think, a head coach, you won't see that continued success. Maybe if it's from the recruiting angle or something schematically.
What if strong leader, but weak IQ, weak football IQ?
And that's where Providence, like, that was like our head coach, Coach Coggs, was the defensive coordinator for some of the state teams in the 80s and 90s. And I mean, the guy, he won state championships, but once he became head coach and when I was like in the program, it really felt like the assistant coaches were the head coaches. Like, our defensive coordinator, Jim Strimmel, who he passed it down to another guy, Mike Hearn. Like, Strimmel was so damn smart. And the one thing that he harped on our defense was just being gap sound. And if you watch Iowa State play defense, Iowa State runs a very similar defense to what Providence did, where we had like a guy straight on their center, two ends that would divide their guard and tackles in like the 4-eye. And then we would have backers And the goal of the D-line was to eat blocks and the backers to make plays. That's our entire scheme at Providence. Coach Coggs, our head coach, was not the one instilling that scheme. It was the DC, the assistant, the position coaches. Those guys were the one instilling it. Strim and Hearn were the reason our defense hummed, not Coggs. Coggs really didn't do much to our culture. So if your high school has a great head coach, your culture is going to be phenomenal and it'll only be beneficial. You don't really need a great head coach in high school football. You need great assistant and position coaches. Those are the guys that make the wheels turn, the guys that install that offensive scheme, that philosophy, what you're going to do. Here's a good story. Our third game of our senior year, our offensive coordinator was in the hospital. He had some stress issues with his stomach, I don't know, ulcers or something. And he wasn't able to coach against St. Rita, probably our biggest rivalry game. So the first 2 weeks, we didn't run the ball a ton, but we did. It was East St. Louis and then St. John Vianney, both played in state championships the year prior. And we didn't run the ball a ton. We weren't really in great running situations to do it. So our OC leaves, and he's a father of a former quarterback who won the state championship at Providence, who Justin Hunterford was an unbelievable quarterback. If anyone's listening, hasn't heard of him, go look up his stats. The guy was so good, but obviously the dad wants to like do an air raidish kind of offense. And he took the offense that Justin had at college. Like they literally stole North Central College's offense. And we were running a college offense in high school and so much terminology and shit. And it was just like a little complicated, but it was like, what's your strength of the team? In our offensive line in high school, we averaged 275 pounds. For a high school O-line, that's fucking big. And we had an all-state running back and a quarterback who the papers called Houdini with the ball. So, yeah, guess what we did against St. Rita? We ran the fuck out of the ball. We ran it for like 50 times for 300 and some yards. That's an identity. That's your assistant coaches knowing what you're good at and hammering it. We were great at running the ball. So you know what we did? We ran it. And we started to run it every game after that like we knew we could, because it just took like our quarterback coach and our O-line coach to combine for play calling duties to decide to run the ball 50 times and understand this is what we're good at. Yes, your OC and your DC will set the scheme and your head coach will set the culture, but your position coaches and those assistant coaches know your team, I would say, best than anyone else on the team.
Well, going off of that, that's what I wanted to ask you for my final question. And then I think we can wrap up here.
Yes.
This was a really fun one. When you look at the NFL, you look at college, and you look at these teams, even like the Bears, where Matt Nagy, who is an offensive guy, hands off the reins for play calling and scheming and all that. Hands off obviously doesn't run defense either. The DC does that. So when it comes to, is the head coach at times an overrated position at all? When you have the assistants running basically, like what is the role of the head coach besides being a quote unquote leader of the team?
So in the NFL sense, the head coach, like you're either going to be hired as an offensive or defensive, like minded head coach. And that's just the way the NFL is kind of gone. So like with Nagy, he's obviously an offensive. When you look at a guy like Lovie Smith, he's a defensive coach. So when you bring that guy in, the number one thing you want from your head coach is make that side of the ball that you're actually like good on good. And that, I guess when you say it like that, Coach Coggs, defensive coordinator, our defense was something we always hung our hats on at Providence. Great linebackers, great D-line. We always stopped the run. That's what we were good at. And that was Coach Coggs' like philosophy was we need to be good defensively. We were. But when you look at a guy like Nagy and he gets hired to a predominantly like defensive run game oriented organization to, as an Andy Reid disciple, it was a very unorthodox hire, but it proved that like we want this team to have this look. And they tried. They cut Jordan Howard and they got a guy like Montgomery to be more of a scat kind of receiving through the tackle guy who can do multiple things. Jordan Howard couldn't do that, but Montgomery and Tariq can. The thing that like I think a lot of fans would understand with Nagy and like that head coach philosophy is if they drafted someone not named Mitch at quarterback, if pasted with Fox at coach, if they didn't draft Mitch, and they had someone like Watson, Mahomes, or like a Josh Allen or someone like that playing in Matt's scheme, it would make way more sense, I think. And I also think if they hire an offensive head coach like they have in Nagy, and they didn't dedicate as much draft capital as you'd want to the offensive side of the ball. Like I've said on this pod, they haven't drafted a tackle since 2014 outside of the sixth or seventh round. They haven't drafted a receiver worth a shit since Darnell Mooney. Okay. And he was a fourth round. They haven't drafted a quarterback, period, since Mitch. So when you don't attack those positions that make an offense actually worthwhile and you hire an offensive coach, it looks contradictory and looks stupid. So you need the entire organization to be in line in the NFL more so than like college or high school. But the head coach's job is to set like the tone and the philosophy for what he wants that team to be. And you look at someone like Sean McVay that came into LA or St. Louis after Jeff Fisher was gone. Jeff Fisher, I don't know what his philosophy is. He's a defensive back in the NFL that came in. He's an average head coach. Well, you bring in Sean McVay and he flips their identity to an offensive dominant team that drafted well defensively. And now they have a team that's a little top heavy, but they've made the playoffs in deep runs for the past 4 years because they know what they're good at. They're good at holding the ball, misdirecting the defense. And then once they have that lead, they have an Aaron Donald to get after the passer. They went and got a Jalen Ramsey to really lock down the secondary. They have holes in the linebackers, but they understand what they're good at. Once they have a lead, they know they can get after a quarterback and force mistakes. And that's what they did this past year. The Bears, they don't have that offense right now, but they also haven't dedicated that draft capital to the offense, I think. So the organization's not on the same page. And for a head coach to really be effective and instill his philosophy, everybody needs to be on the same page. And that's, I don't think you've really seen that in Chicago. But maybe you are now with all the rumors about Wilson coming here and the ability to trade shit away that we've been drafting the past 3 years that hasn't really pushed this team to the next level. I saw a tweet. This is a little off topic, but the Bears' last three first-round picks were Kevin White, Leonard Floyd, Mitch Trubisky. Would you trade three first-round picks like those for Russell Wilson? Yeah, any day of the week, okay? Mm-hmm. But that's the type of thing that, like, now we're maybe on the same page. I don't know. We'll see in the draft, but it really takes everyone to be on that same page for complete effectiveness.
For sure. And do you want to wrap this thing up? I think this was a good little football wrestling combo. Iowa sports in there. This is what we're all about.
This is just a little break from the Iowa basketball. I mean, Iowa basketball is like a drug that we're all addicted to right now. And I think we need to like stop injecting it in us for a day. Mm-hmm. So this is our... this is our little
getaway. It's our little cleansing. Vacation.
It's our detox. Spot. It's our detox from the spot. Franz boys and all that.
Yeah, for real. And I guess my final words would be, guys, we're continuing to make content that we enjoy. We hope you guys enjoy. We're going to continue to get some fun guests and some surprising guests that you guys won't be expecting. Those are going to be coming soon. And Jack, you want to wrap this thing up?
Yeah, you guys know the drill. Not the same time, same place. We will see you guys later.